Since we're talking about singers, I think we should talk about Bing Crosby. I've picked up a number of Bing Crosby stories through the years. And Joe Weintraub, who does all the research for Billboard magazine and compiles all that information, says that Bing Crosby was the most popular entertainer of the first half of the 20th century. And when you look at those record charts, you know it's true. And of course, anybody that knows show business knows this is true. Bing Crosby was an American institution. When Bing hit on the radio, he became such a superstar, he actually helped really launch the record industry. Until then, records were sold in drugstores, they were sold in department stores. Bing Crosby sold so many records, and this was during the Depression, that stores that just specialized in records started opening. And of course, that started more people making more records, and we had the advent of a whole new industry, all because of Bing Crosby. When I grew up, you'd see Bing Crosby on television, you'd see his old movies with Bob Hope, you'd hear him on the radio once in a while or on TV, but he really wasn't the guy for my generation. However, I, like everybody else, always knew about Bing Crosby. As I got older, I really appreciated his music more and more and more, getting into his early stuff, and this music is incredible. You know, it is amazing when you think about this guy who started charting in 1926 with the Paul Whiteman Rhythm Boys, and he still had records on the chart at the time of his death in 1977. I don't know if anybody's going to be able to tackle that time span for singles and albums, and for being a star in so many different mediums, motion pictures, television, radio, records, concert halls. By the way, Ellis Winston, a great critic over in England, always thought it was interesting that whom he considered the two greatest musical entertainers of the 20th century, Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, he thought they were both so typical of America. They were both real Americans, but so different. So different in that Bing Crosby was cool when Frank Sinatra was hot. Both of their approaches to a song, their phrasing. And what he really thought was interesting, and I'm sure our listeners would be happy to know this, is that neither one of them could read music. Everything they did was pure intuition. One of the great duets of all time, in the motion picture High Society, Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra together singing Cole Porter's Well Have You Ever. There's a very charming inside joke there. Bing Crosby is singing, bum, 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 bum. And Frank goes, I don't dig that kind of crooning, chum. Bing says, you must be one of the new boys on the block. I was working Warner Hot Springs outside of San Diego around 1982 or 83. This was an exclusive club, and it has tennis courts and golf courses and horseback riding and, of course, a wonderful lounge, luxurious suites. And I started noticing they had a Bing Crosby park, a Bing Crosby suite, the Bing Crosby this, the Bing Crosby that, and I was wondering what that was all about. So after the show that night, I was chatting with one of the guys that ran the club, and I asked him, what is all this Bing Crosby stuff around here? And he told me what I considered a fascinating story. He said in 1955, him and some buddies had purchased that property there at Warner Hot Springs. They knew that the hot springs would draw people, but what happens if they put in golf courses, tennis courts, luxurious suites, swimming pools? They think they're going to have a very profitable operation. One of the things they decided to do was to get someone connected with this idea of having fun, of golfing, of hunting, of horseback riding, of tennis. And the person they thought of was Bing Crosby. If they made him a member of the club, people would flock to join that club. So he said, we discussed it. We thought, Bing Crosby, he's the guy. He's the guy we want. And we'll give him an honorary membership, and boy, we'll be able to launch something that people won't believe. He said, so we went about contacting Bing Crosby, and sure enough, we got a call from Basil Grillo. Now, I knew he was telling me the truth because Basil Grillo was indeed Bing Crosby's right-hand man. And he said, Basil gave us a call and said, yeah, would you like to make an appointment to see Bing? He said it was very casual, and he said we were sort of shocked that the guy so readily answered our call. And we said, sure, we'd love to see him. He said, well, we set up the date, and we all drove up to Los Angeles to the Bing Crosby building to meet Bing Crosby. He said we were rather young guys in our 20s, and of course, Bing was the big star of the era. So he says, you know, we were a bit taken back when we went to meet him. He said he was, of course, just as you have seen him on television or on the movies, and he said we were just like in awe, though. This is Bing Crosby. He said, however, we quickly settled down to business when Bing said, what's your pitch? He said, well, we have this place and it has hot springs and we're going to build golf courses. We're going to have tennis. We're going to have horseback riding. It's going to be a complete outdoorsman club. And what we would like to do, Mr. Crosby, is make you an honorary member. And all this is free to you. He said he'll never forget Bing sitting back behind this desk with a pipe in his mouth, looking at them with his little blue eyes. And he said it seemed like an eternity before he started to tell them, "Guys, I can hunt anywhere. I can fish anywhere. I can golf anywhere. Why you want me to join your organization is so you can sell memberships and make a lot of money." He said, "Now here's how the deal works. You give me $100,000. You can say I'm a member. And you can do whatever you want." He said, "We just sat there. We didn't know what to say." Bing got up, walked over, shook our hands, said, "Guys, call us. Let us know what you want to do." He left the room. Bing's man, Basil Grello, came in, escorted us out of the building. He said, "And we drive back to San Diego discussing this." He said, $100,000 was a lot of money in 1955 when this took place. He said, "So then we call Basil Grillo up 2 weeks later because we decided, yes, indeed, this would be a good move to make. This will get the business we want." And we tell him that we'll pay the $100,000. And Basil tells us, "By the way, you did know that was $100,000 a year, didn't you?" He said, "Oh, man, I got to go back to my friends and tell them, but we decide, yes, if this thing works out, we did the numbers. Yeah, we can pay him $100,000 a year." He said, "So yes, indeed, we did pay $100,000 a year. We did name all these things after Bing Crosby. Bing Crosby never came there. And when Bing died in 1977, we stopped making our payments of $100,000 a year." And 6 months later, we got a phone call from Catherine Crosby, Bing's widow, who said, "Hey, you haven't been making your payments." We said, "Well, Bing's dead. It's over." She said, "Really? You guys still using his name in all the buildings and everything? Still saying he was a member of the organization?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, you've got to keep paying." He said, "Well, I'll talk it over with my business partners." And he did and said, "Well, we talked it over and you're going to get your $100,000 a year." She said, "Oh, no, it's not $100,000 a year now. It's $200,000 a year." He said, "What do you mean $200,000 a year? The man is dead." She said, "Well, he's worth even more money now. And if you don't want to pay the $200,000, you can't use his name." He said, "End of story. We're paying the $200,000 a year." So that'll give you a little idea of how Der Bingle operated. Now, I'm not telling tales out of school when I tell you that Bing Crosby was quite a drinker. His golfing and hunting buddy Phil Harris and Bing were particularly fond of tequila and actually had perfected a tequila to their own specifications, which they were beginning to market at the time of Bing's death. Now, I'm going to come back to this in the story, so bear with me. I was working in Seattle doing a club there. A local critic had given me a review, and we were chatting after a show, and I mentioned Bing Crosby, and he said, "If you like Bing Crosby, there's a guy up here who knows all about Bing Crosby. He's a collector, blah, 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 blah." And this guy's name was Bill Osborne. I met Bill Osborne, who was an older gentleman, and I want to relay to you this story of Bill Osborne's. Bill Osborne, when he was a young man, was playing tennis. He was quite good at tennis, and a local country club started paying for his training as a tennis player because he had real ability and they thought he could go somewhere as a professional tennis player. And of course, they wanted to be the sponsors of him. Now, he said every day he would get out on those courts and work out, work out, work out. And he said there was a couple of days there was this old guy, it looked like a bum, who would sit in the stands. There'd be nobody around and just watch him and watch him. And he said this guy was starting to get on his nerves. He says, so one day, as I'm leaving, he sees this bum standing there as he's getting ready to walk into the dressing room. And the old bum says, "Hey, you were really good today." And he said, "I was going to ask him, who are you? What are you here for? What's going on?" He said, "When I noticed he had these real blue eyes and the tone of his voice sounded interesting, all of a sudden it dawned on me." And he said, "I blurted out, you're Bing Crosby." And he said he was smoking a pipe and he had a beard and he had an old hat on and a coat. And he said, "Yeah, I'm Bing Crosby." He says, "Gee, what do you look like this for? You're Bing Crosby." And he said he started laughing. And he said, "I come to Seattle every year for a couple of weeks to relax. And I hunt and I fish, I golf. I don't shave. I just take it easy. I throw on whatever clothes there is. It's really a vacation for me. And I know the guys here. And they told me what a good tennis player you were. So I thought I would come in and just see how you were doing. And I've really been enjoying watching you play tennis." And he said, as I got to know Bing Crosby, All he would really talk about is sports. Sports, sports, sports. He said Bing was just obsessed with sports, any type of sports. He loved to golf. He loved to hunt. He loved to fish. He loved baseball, football. And he said, oddly enough, I love sports too. So that's all we would talk about is sports. Sports is the thing that brought us two together. Later, he came to see Bill play championship matches in Los Angeles, invited him to his house. He got to meet the family, and their friendship just continued to grow. When Bill got out of the Army, he became a radio disc jockey in Seattle. And he said, Bing Crosby had told him one time, he said, Bill, if there's anything I can ever do to help you, let me know, and I'll do that thing. He said, well, he was a little hesitant to do this because he was just about 18 years old. This was in 1949. He said, but if I'm going to have a radio show, I want to kick it off with Bing Crosby. He said, so he went about it by phoning Basil Grillo, who was Bing's right-hand man. And he said, sure enough, Bing called him. He said, Bing, if I'm being too forward here, you tell me, but I have a radio show here in Seattle, and I was wondering if you would be my guest. Bing said, listen, if I got the time to do it when I'm in Seattle, I'll be happy to do your show. He said, sure enough, the radio show coincided with the time that Bing was going to be in Seattle. And he said, here I am, this 18-year-old kid with a radio show in Seattle, and Bing Crosby's my guest. So we were in the papers, we're the talk of the town. And he said, my career as a DJ was launched by having Bing Crosby as my guest on the studio. But he was more than my guest. He was my friend. Now, Bill Osborne told me that when he would visit Bing at his home, he found him very, very friendly. He said, however, when they would be out mixing with people, on occasion, Bing would be very cold. And Bing explained to him that if he talked to everybody, he wasn't going to have a life. So he had to turn it on sometimes and turn it off sometimes. Bill Osborne told me that he attended the Pebble Beach golf tournament several times, but one particular moment stands out in his mind. It was the time that Peggy Lee was appearing in the show they would do at the end of the tournament. And Bing invited him, Bill Osborne, to hang out in San Francisco a couple of days later where Bing was doing his radio show from. And he said Peggy Lee was going to be on the show. And he remembers this fantastic night when Bing and Peggy Lee and himself went out to all these little dives in San Francisco. And he said people would just be amazed that they would walk in, sit down, have a few drinks. And he said, I was amazed. At one of these little dives, Bing got up to sing with the group. He said, I had forgotten that Bing was actually a jazz singer to begin with, so he could improvise pretty well. And he said, Bing was drinking, having a great time and singing, and he'll never forget being in a little jazz joint. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the piano player didn't know this one song, and Bing is going, vamp, vamp, vamp. And he says, those are those just once-in-a-lifetime things that happen. He said, if somebody really wants to know Bing's devotion to music, because that was the true love of his life, the jazz violinist, Joe Venuti, who any real jazz person knows, played with Bing on many, many of his sessions and also in his live concerts. And he said, Joe Venuti told him, they played Paris in 1955. And he said, after the show, we went up to the suite to have a few drinks and talk. And he said, there was maybe about 15 people in the room. And he said, I want to tell you something, Bill. He said, Bing sang that night so fantastic. It was the best I'd ever heard him. And I'd been with this guy like 15 years. And he said, all these people were in this room, and Joe Venuti said he walked over to Bing, and he says, Bing, I want to tell you something. Tonight you sang better than I've ever heard you sing in your life. And he said, I couldn't believe what happened. Bing started to cry. And he said, I thought, oh, my God, what have I done? This is a man that never cries. He said, Bing started to cry. And I said, oh, gosh, Bing, are you okay? He says, Joe, thank you. Thank you so much. He says, nobody tells me that anymore. He says, singing, that's what it's all about. I've been doing it since I was a kid, and I always try to do my best, but nobody ever tells me how good I sing anymore. And Joe said, he actually hugged me. He said, I almost fainted. Bing Crosby doesn't do these things. He said, but that moment in Paris, Joe Venuti never forgot. And Bill Osborne said, I could never forget a story like that. Now I want to bring you back to the tequila with Phil Harris. I said to Bill Osborne, I understand that Phil Harris and Bing Crosby came up with a formula for their particular type of tequila. He said, oh, yes, Bing loved tequila. He said, after 5 o'clock, you better believe it was tequila time with Mr. Crosby. And I said, well, you know, I just wish they would have been able to have that out on the market because that would have been a great souvenir. He said, well, they didn't get out on the market, but they did do 100 test bottles. And guess who has some of those bottles? I said, come on, Phil. He said, yes, indeed. And indeed, he gave to me a bottle of Bing Crosby, Phil Harris tequila, which I kept as a souvenir. I have the bottle. And I must say the tequila was wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Crosby.